You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Today on the show, we've got Clay Henry in studio. We'll talk about Arkansas, Texas A&M, plus we'll talk about the SEC games around the conference. First, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
A long time ago, whenever Clay and I would do a podcast together, we would do it at his kitchen table here in Fayetteville. He doesn't live in Fayetteville anymore. And you would make apple pancakes. We'd eat apple pancakes, and then we'd get our fill, and then we'd do the show. You remember that?
I do remember that. And those, by the way, were my dad's apple pancakes. Okay. That's the recipe. Family recipe, Matt.
Well, I wanted to – here, you got the book. I'm going to let you hold this thing up. I wanted to mention this before we get going. Clay was at an event last night, kind of like a launch party, I guess you will,
a reveal
for this cookbook. And it's called Eat Like the Hogs, and it was compiled by Karen Van Horn, who is Dave's wife, and Becky Bull, who is the wife of Scott Bull, the former Razorback quarterback. This is actually pretty cool. You can tell they spent a lot of time on this, going and getting recipes.
3 years.
3 years. Family recipes from pretty much a who's who of anybody who was ever at Arkansas. And it's not just football. It's not just baseball. It's across all kind of spectrums of
track,
Razorback
golf,
sports.
Works.
Take it from there. This is a cool deal.
It's about 190 pages, and there's around 300 recipes from in the list of people's recipes. And some might have three recipes in there. Mm-hmm. Dave Van Horn has, I think, three recipes in. But it's you know, John Daly. It's the works. You know, major league player, baseball players, James McCann, you know, his recipes in there. And it's side dishes, appetizers. Jim Lindsay's got several recipes, you know, that Lindy provided.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's really cool. John Daly's steak recipe includes Kentucky bourbon. You probably are not stunned over that reveal. All of them were prepared and tested and taste tested by a committee of friends and family. Dave Van Horn said he tested all the baseball related, like Andrew Benintendi's lasagna. He made it and tested it. Scott Bull made and tested Frank Burrell's fudge recipe, which is a candy recipe. Oh, apparently making candy is a very delicate process that requires a lot of stirring. Scott Bull told me that anybody that takes on that recipe needs to call him because he will pray for him. It's that tough.
These are the two that I was most interested in. Bubba Carpenter, who's on our show.
He's got
in the
several recipes.
Yeah, we've got Bubba's deer chili.
Oh, yeah.
And then a little bit later, Bubba's venison tenderloin. Here's what I want to do, Sydney. When the spring comes around, one of the days that we have Bubba on the podcast, let's just go out to his house. You know, he's got a big kitchen. It's probably bigger than the rest of our houses. And he can cook for us. And we could do like kind of a cooking / baseball combo podcast. That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, it's a fun cookbook, and there are literally 50 recipes I want to try. Eddie Jackson, Food Network star, former player, he's got three recipes mm-hmm. in the book, and then he's got a kind of review of the book on the back jacket. I wrote my column this week at Whole Hog Sports.
Mm-hmm.
When you get around to it this afternoon,
it'll be on the site.
Yeah. By the time the podcast comes up, it'll be there. And Dave Van Horn's, as I said, he's got several, but he's really proud of his crock pot steak. He makes filet mignon steak in a crock pot with vegetables, and then gravy comes from that, and it goes over mashed potatoes. Karen Van Horn, you know, tested and made a lot of these recipes, sip, she would not make any of the wild game. She said she did not taste or make Darren McFadden's country boy wild rabbit and rice. She didn't make that.
Mm. Don't blame her. No surprise, by the way, that Bubba's got a deer in his recipe. You said you thought your dad's apple pancakes would be your contribution if they had asked you.
And we've talked about that, and there may be a second book, mm-hmm. and that would be my contribution. And that's a Christmas routine. You know, my dad always made it, and it's like crepes, really thin. You use a little bit more milk. Mm-hmm. You slice up tart apples in the batter, and then after you make them, you top them with butter, sugar, and cinnamon, and it kind of caramelizes.
That's good.
Oh, I've had it.
Yeah, no, it's good. It sounds good as you're talking about it.
Extremely filling.
Yes, I'd say so. Yeah, I don't know what I would like. Not that they want anything from me, but like if they came to me and said, "Hey, do you have a recipe you could contribute?" I don't know what it would be.
Well, I thought you were in the book. It says Matt Jones.
I may
Jones.
Just give them, yeah.
Quarterback Matt Jones.
Other Matt Jones. I'd probably give them something of my mom's.
Actually, that's where really a lot of these
pie.
Are.
Dad was always the one who would make the really good dinners, and my mom can make the desserts.
That's
it seems like that happens a lot of times in homes.
Yeah, David Basil's recipe was his mother's strawberry cake, and he said his memory is getting to lick the mixer.
Yeah.
Afterwards, when she made the icing. So there is Harold Horton's contribution is actually from his wife, Betty, is barbecued rice. And that's a regular in our home. Of course, my wife is from DeWitt,
mm-hmm.
Betty and Harold DeWitt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a recipe that's handed down in Arkansas County. It's got liquid smoke in it.
We were talking about this, something my dad talked, because we lived in a small town too. He's got this salsa recipe that he makes every summer. And he had it somewhere. It's so good. But he had it somewhere, and he told the lady, he's like, "Hey, you know, could you give me your recipe? Well, I got this from Mrs. Whoever, and I need to ask her
permission
if I can give it to you." It's like, and I think, you know, you and I were talking about how they had to get permission for all these recipes.
For pictures, photos.
Yeah.
And from... They have written permission
it's
for every family.
It's just so weird how different it is. Now, you know, now everybody wants to put their recipes on Instagram and what was the one we were talking about, Pinterest. And it's just so different than it used to be where these were – it's totally a 180 from where it used to be this kind of state secret that a family had, how to make grandma's brownies, where now you put it out and, you know, you want everybody to read how to do that.
So one of my teammates from – grade school or classmates, I should say, Muskie Harris, who played for the mm-hmm. Razorbacks in the 70s. We went to Pulaski Heights Junior High in Little Rock Central, played summer baseball together. He has the recipe of the dinner that they served Frank Burrells and Wilson Matthews when they came to his house for the in-home visit. It's called Soul Food Dinner. It's got 10 pounds of chicken necks.
That could be fun. Like just get nothing but homemade recipes that you give the coaches when they come to the in-home visit. Because what was it that you always ask for seconds? You always had to ask for seconds.
Yeah, and
the coaches will talk about they'll gain 20, 30 pounds during the recruiting cycle because of all the in-home visits, and you don't want to ever make the host upset by not asking for more food.
Pat Jones tells a story about taking an in-home visit with Coach Burrells to visit Leotis Harris.
Mm-hmm.
And Pat told him just before they got there, said, "Oh, I just ate. I'm probably not going to eat." And he goes, "Oh, you will eat, and you'll ask for seconds." And he says, "What do you mean? I'm full." He goes, "That's not how this works, Pat."
Yeah. So this is Eat Like the Hogs. I think we're going to try to get Karen Van Horn and Becky Bull on to talk about this at some point a little bit later on. But this is pretty cool. Again, Clay's going to have something about this that you can read on our website this
afternoon.
Interviewed
Dave and Scott, and they're tickled that their wives are now done with this.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them, I said, "Oh, no, they're not done."
Yeah.
The book signings are just about to start. You know, they're going to travel to alumni chapters. And the book signings are in. Dave said he would finish making recruiting calls to the West Coast. You know, that's going to be later at night, about 10:30. He'd go by the study to go to bed, and Karen's in there proofing recipes, and he says, "Oh, I'm just shutting the door.
Yeah.
Going to be there for another 3 hours."
All right, moving on. Arkansas, Texas A&M is tomorrow, 2:30 kickoff over at Razorback Stadium. The big question that I've been getting from everybody around town is this game going to start on time? The weather does not look great tomorrow.
Lightning delays.
Lightning delays, potentially. You're talking about high wind, maybe even hail potential here in town. And you never know. I mean, there's still a lot of uncertainty about when these storms are going to come through. And I think from what I've read, once they get here, they're going to move through fairly fast. It's just a matter of, is it going to be early in the morning? Is it going to be middle of the day? Is it going to be middle of the afternoon? We'll see. We sat through some games before, several games, where weather played a factor in football. I think we're both so conditioned to being at baseball games that it really doesn't faze us a whole lot. Because it's similar protocol to being able to restart a game. Lightning has to be outside of an 8-mile radius. Got to have a 30-minute, it's got to be outside of that radius for 30 minutes. Got to have a warm-up time. And then you get going again. It's just, football is one of those sports that you can play it in the rain, whereas baseball, you don't want to play it in the rain. And so when you have weather delays, it seems like it's just a bigger deal for a football game than it is for baseball.
Well, the Lightning is the key event, you're right. And I think it was, when they expanded the stadium, I think one of the first games was Tennessee, and that was a long Lightning delay ahead of that game. Mm-hmm. And, oh, it seems like it might have been an hour. And, you know, they typically like to store the fans underneath, and there really wasn't room in the concourses for that many fans. So that's a little bit problematic, and I don't know that it'll be a full house for this game. Although I think there is some excitement over this team versus maybe where we were a few weeks ago, because there is intrigue in that, you know, we've got an interim coach that's trying to win the job. Mm-hmm. Bobby Petrino, I mean, there isn't any doubt he's trying to win the job. Yeah. I mean, win games, win favor, however you want to write it down.
And there's more concourse space now with that north end zone.
Oh, you're right.
A lot of concourse space in there. I've seen a lot of tickets for sale for this game. Feels like more so than I've seen for earlier games this year. I figure there are going to be a lot of Aggies at this game. You know, this is – think about, they've been in the SEC for 13 years now. This is their 14th season. This is the second time that they've gotten to come to Fayetteville for a conference game. So I think that there's going to be a big – you know how it is with A&M. It's, football's a huge deal there. They've got grads that are spread out all across the country. I know some here in town myself. So it's a big deal for them to be here. I think it'll probably be a pretty good crowd, but the weather has – I think that – weather always kind of scares people away a little bit. You know, you don't want to make that drive up for, you know, something where you're going to be sitting out in the rain for three and a half hours.
So do I get to tell my favorite Aggie joke?
Sure.
Okay. They found the skeleton of an Aggie in the closet of the fourth floor of an engineering department. He was a 1943 hide-and-seek champ.
All right.
I've told that one before. You haven't heard it? Is that the first time?
I think that's the first time I've heard that one.
It'd probably be the last time.
I always liked, you know, when Bob Holt would write about Arkansas, Texas A&M, he would always try to find an Aggie joke to kind of bake into his story. Or he would say something, and then he'd say, and that's no Aggie joke.
That's no Aggie joke. So you can ask Siri for jokes, and you can turn them into Aggie jokes. Mm. I mean, Siri will just keeps spitting them out for you.
What do you think about A&M?
They look like a complete team.
I think so, too.
I mean, I think when – and you look at the line of scrimmage, which is where I always try to start, they are one of the better teams in the country as far as offensive line experience, defensive line experience, edge rushers, which I think is – a critical area that Arkansas lacks. They definitely have the edge rushers to make it tough on the quarterback. I think that Marcel Reed came into his own in the last few games. It looks like he's comfortable in the pocket, whereas maybe he wasn't when he first played. You know, it would flush out pretty quickly. There aren't as many designed runs for him as there were when he first played. Because he can run through his reads in the passing game. I think they've got true speed at the critical positions. I'm talking about wide receiver, running back, tight end, mean, you just think about Arkansas's tight end Platt. He couldn't get it on the field because of the talent they had at tight end. That's why he transferred to Arkansas. They're probably least experienced, talented in the secondary, which gives Arkansas a little bit of hope that maybe Bobby Petrino's, you know, crossing routes, passing game, drag patterns can, you know, throw a little bit of a, you know, a curve for them. And, you know, maybe Arkansas can get some points because I think they really do that well. I'm talking about the Razorbacks. And I think that the protection has been better this year, which gives some hope that, you know, maybe that Taylen Green can be effective in the passing game. But I'm surprised the line is – has it been 8.5 to 9 in the last couple of days?
7.5 to 8.5 is what I've seen.
Yeah, so I think that Texas A&M should be a 2-touchdown favorite. And you know, I'm not really good at it navigating you know those betting lines, but they're to me they should be a heavy favorite.
They got a really good defensive end, Cassius Howell. I think he leads
that's the
SEC.
That's the guy.
7.5 sacks. He's got 8.5 tackles for a loss. I was talking with somebody the other day. Go ahead.
If there is a difference in the two teams, it's that one position.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to somebody the other day, talking about Reed. He came in kind of mid-season last year when Connor Wigman wasn't, you know, number one, I didn't think Wigman was a good fit for the Colin Klein offense that he brought with him from K-State, which is basically what he was running, what they call it, the Power Cat offense under Bill Snyder.
Those quarterback counters.
Yes. And so Reed comes in last year, and they made it work with him. But what I think I see from A&M now is they went out and they got some real guys at receiver this year. Mario Craver from Mississippi State, Casey Concepcion from North Carolina State. And to me, this looks like a much more wide-open version of Colin Klein's offense than I've seen before. And I think that it probably starts with the fact that they figured out last year what works, what doesn't work with Marcel Reed, and then the speed that they got on the outside. That's really the big difference that I see with A&M this year.
Yeah, I think their protection is improved as well, which gives them time to do some things in the passing game. Mm-hmm. You know, run some deeper routes because they do have a vertical passing game that maybe Arkansas hasn't seen a lot. Well, they saw it against Notre Dame for sure. But that gives me concern. I thought Arkansas played more press coverage at Tennessee than I'd seen, and that might be the one real change in what they've done defensive philosophy. Well, if you're going to play press coverage and the other team can protect, then you've got a chance to get beat deep. So that might be something to watch in this game where there might be some separation that kind of goes against what that betting line would suggest, one touchdown and a little change.
Being at home, the rain, those are things that can certainly level the playing field a little bit. It could make it worse. I mean, with Arkansas's fumble issues, you wonder about what's it going to be like when they're playing with a wet football. But, you know, one of the things that with A&M, I think a big thing that I've seen against Arkansas that's hurt them this year has been the running quarterback. Even Rainer from Arkansas State, you know, you take away – you adjust his rushing total for sack yards in that game. You take the 42 sack yards away. He averaged a lot of yards per carry. He had some runs where he really got out there. Memphis's quarterback ran for over 100. Trinidad Chambliss had a good day running against them for in the Ole Miss game. Even Aguilar last week against Tennessee, he hurt him with his legs a little bit. The Reed's ability to move outside the pocket and run, I think that's a real X factor in this game.
So you're kind of torn. If you want to play man-to-man, and that gives you a chance to free up one more guy to pressure, that's when Reed can really hurt you. And I think that's what's happened this season, some exactly what you just described. If you're playing man, your back's to the quarterback a lot of times because you're chasing a receiver, tight end or a wide receiver, or even a back. If you're manned up all the way around in the secondary so you can free up one more, well, they'll just call quarterback runs and block up the spy. Mm-hmm. You know, if they can identify the spy, you can really punish with quarterback runs.
Arkansas, they got to be able to play well at home. I mean, that's really – you can talk about all the things with Sam Pittman, but I think what ultimately did him in was the type of losses they were suffering in Fayetteville. You go back to 2 years ago, 38 points to Auburn, 34 to Missouri. Last year, 24 to LSU, 32 to Ole Miss, and then what happened against Notre Dame. You can't keep running off your field like that. And so that's one of the things that I'm interested to see this weekend is, you know, what kind of fight do they bring into this? Because I don't know that they're going to beat A&M, but if they bring a good fight against A&M at home and they're able to replicate that next week and the week after, I think they've got a chance to win a couple of conference games during this homestand.
So I think what you described is exactly right. And what I've seen, and this isn't just the last 2 years, it would be typical of the entire Sam Pittman era, and it's the roller coaster. Mm-hmm. They will have a good game, and it might be an upset. You know, they might beat Tennessee, mm-hmm. and then they fall flat the next week. And mm-hmm. it's maintain a consistent effort and emotion. And I think that goes back to preparation during the week. I think when you're an average team and you have a really good performance, you think you've arrived. And you the only way you can play in the SEC is to have consistent practices and preparation. I think you play exactly the way you prepare. And if you're not prepared, then things in the games take you by surprise and you can't adjust. If you're prepared, then you understand exactly how to adjust to what the other team is bringing to the table. They didn't look like they were prepared for Ole Miss last year. Mm-hmm. In some ways that's defense, but it's not just defense. It was in every area. Blocking assignments, you know, the reads by the quarterback, and all that goes back to preparation. And the coaches can tell you this is, you know, they can give you the assignments, but you have to learn them. You have to perfect them in practice. And it just looked like that roller coaster effect was they weren't prepared in some weeks. And I think that's a mental problem with an average team.
Do you think they can hang on to the ball?
Well, it's a consistent problem that I think is technique. And when I watch NFL games, I know you do too, and if there's a running back that has poor technique and he fumbles, you don't see him again. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't see him ever again.
Gosh, the Jets earlier this year, the first game under Aaron Glenn, they had a receiver. Their fourth quarter, they're driving. He fumbles the ball, and it basically cost them the game.
They
cut him the next day.
I'm saying. It's totally, they disappeared.
It's just such a different – we talk about how college football is becoming the NFL. It ain't there yet. It's not like that.
So coaching to me isn't knowing the game. It's being able to transmit your knowledge to the player. And I'm sure they're working on technique. I'm sure they're working on 3 points of pressure, the ball tight to the rib cage. But Mike Washington had one fumble. That's the only fumble that he's had. Mm-hmm. He's got that fixed. But you have to have the whole team fixed. And the combination of the other team is playing proper technique and you're not means that you're losing the turnover battle. And that's part of the roller coaster.
Well, and the fact that Talon Green seems to be the one that's fumbling, like his fumble, at least to me, those are the ones that I notice most, because he fumbled, what, like 14 times last year? Now, he didn't lose all of them.
Some of that's protection.
But then, you know, this year he's already fumbled, I think, maybe 5 times. Like that's
2 critical loss fumbles.
And that's the thing with him. You think back to the A&M game last year. He fumbles at the 10-yard line. That's the ball game. A&M, they recovered at the 10. They scored like a play or two later. They ended up winning by 4 points. It's the critical timing of the turnovers with him. I mean, you think about all the games that have turned when he's had a turnover, and it's usually a fumble. Sometimes it's an interception, but a lot of times it's a fumble with him. You know, I mean, how's the Tennessee game go last week if he doesn't fumble in a couple of those spots? It's just that's always been the concern with me about Green, is just it was a problem at Boise State. It's been a problem now for a year and a half at Arkansas. He just gives the ball up too often.
And I go to technique. If you see the ball in the open field in your hand away from your body, it's going to be a fumble eventually, because somebody's going to come from the blind side and slap it free. You don't. Mm-hmm. He doesn't see him. When he sees somebody straight ahead, he'll tuck it. But it's you, when you're in the open field, that ball has to be tight. And, again, you know, if you watch other teams, they're not fumbling. Well, mm-hmm. why? Their technique is good. So that's got to be the point of emphasis. It can't be that it's taught. It has to be learned. It has to be effectively consistent every play. And I know that they're working on it, mm-hmm. but it, you know, coaching, I mean, Why did Bill Burnett play 3 years without a fumble? I mean, he kept it tight to his chest. I mean, he was taking direct hit at the goal line. I mean, how many touchdowns did he score going over the top? He never fumbled once. Tim Horton's running backs, and I don't care if where he was, they didn't fumble once. I mean, that's what he learned under Ken Hatfield. Yeah, I mean, it's 3 points of pressure. You do not turn it over. So we'll see if that changes or that's a consistent problem.
I know they've both been playing with wet balls this week. Just kind of as an aside.
Practicing.
The coaches, the footballs have gotten so expensive to make now. Like, those footballs are like $150 a piece. They don't want to dip too many of them in water.
So they ruins them?
It ruins them, yeah. So
they get fat and waterlogged, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, and, you know, and now, like, nowadays, you don't want to, you know, with all of your expenses being watched the way they are in the wake of the house settlement, you know, wetting too many footballs is not really the
Well, can't it's Nike not, just send them some more?
I guess they can. I think they'll charge them for that.
Oh, they will charge them, yeah.
All right, when we come back, we got some more Razorback football to talk. We'll also take a look around the SEC. First, a word from Kendall
King. No more Aggie jokes.
No.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King. We are Soapbox. We are ShopCart. We are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Clay, I want to hit you with a stat here, and I just want to see what you think. You know, James Franklin got fired at Penn State over the weekend. I think his record was 4-21 against top 10 teams. And it always happens, by the way, whenever a fan base gets sick and tired of a coach, they always like latch on to a stat or like a couple or three, you know, stats. And you see them just regurgitated over and over. We saw it with Houston Nutt here toward the end, like his record against the SEC East. So with Franklin, it was this top 10 stat that has been, you know, kind of following him for the last few years. 4-21 against top 10 teams. I looked this up. Frank Broyles, when he was Arkansas's coach, was 10-21 against top 10 teams, which is not great, but it's not terrible. But Arkansas was one of the top teams then, too. I mean, I think if you looked at Arkansas in 1964-65, you would say that was like we look at Penn State nowadays. I guess it's kind of telling, number one, what the expectations are at Penn State, and number two, Broyles did have a national championship. That makes a big difference. But just how maybe micro everything is put under, or everything's put under the microscope now, relative to how it used to be.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's about expectations, and the you would think that Nolan Richardson's, you know, Final Fours in a national championship, but all at once you have to feed the monster. Mm-hmm. And what you have at Penn State is that you're compared to Joe Paterno. Now, Joe Paterno wasn't in the Big Ten for, you know, the lion's
most
share
of
his,
yeah,
his time. So I think that what they've attempted to do by joining the Big Ten is maybe their fan base doesn't understand that it's not as easy as a schedule. And, you know, they've had some near misses, you know, in the second half. I mean, they had Oregon dead to rights with that comeback and then lost in overtime. And, mm-hmm, and that just kind of furthers their, you know, the expectations of the fans is like he's not meeting them.
Yeah.
And he's lost, like you say, big games.
Yeah.
And he's not winning enough big games. But if you're in – you know, it's about when you play teams and how they're – I mean, Ohio State and Michigan over the last few years, they've been rolling.
Yeah.
Tough to beat.
Indiana locked up Kurt Cignetti yesterday. Did you see this? 8 years, $93 million. I got a kick out of last night on his coach's show on the – they've got a – you know, kind of like what Arkansas does out of the catfish hole. The play-by-play guy, he's reading about the contract, and he stops himself short on the dollar amount. He said, I'm not even going to say it. And Cignetti says, I just want to tell you that 10 years ago, I was making $130,000. As if people, like as if that's under the poverty line or something. I mean, it's just kind of, I don't know.
Which the announcer's making $58,000.
Oh, probably, yeah. If that. Yeah. Yeah, he's probably working two jobs. He's getting like a stipend from Learfield and then working a full-time job.
So I heard Jimbo Fisher say something really similar late in his time at Texas A&M when they were talking about his buyout. And he says, well, I was a coordinator really recently making $147,000. Is like, well, that's not below the poverty line either.
No, but he probably said that three times as fast as you just said it. Jimbo Fisher is like an auctioneer, and I really hope that he's not Arkansas's coach. If for no other reason, I do not want to have to transcribe.
Oh, you've got to record it.
Yeah, you got to record it. Back. Put it in some sort of transcription software.
It's still coach speak. Yeah. But it's really fast.
It's very fast coach speak.
Yeah.
What do you think about the coaching search? Like I mean, it's in a weird spot right now because I don't think there's really a whole lot that can transpire. Petrino, like you mentioned, this is an audition for him, and it may never get past him, depending on how he does. I used a golf analogy a couple of weeks ago. I said he's like a golfer that's gone into Sunday with a 2-stroke lead, and you know, if he eagles a hole or he, you know, makes a couple of birdies, it may be tough for somebody to catch up with him.
Oh, he's got the – I mean, it's his to lose. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's his to lose, and there's nobody else that's in that position. So it is without doubt. Now, I will say, Matt, over the next 7 weeks, I'm going to get tired of someone asking me, you think he's got it?
Yeah.
You think he's got it?
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have you had someone ask you that in the last week?
I don't have any friends, so very many.
How about your son? Is Jack asking?
No, he doesn't ask about that.
He doesn't. Well, no. He will.
Yeah.
It's because he's going to hear somebody else ask it. You know who's going to determine this? It's his players.
Yeah.
If they hold on to the rope, I think everybody will be able – that will be the most obvious thing, is that they play hard to the finish line. I always was amazed that – there might be a key loss during the season of the Houston Nutt time, and his players never turn loose of the rope. I always thought they might, because it's like, that didn't go well. You know, it would be a loss, and they came back and played 3 straight games really hard. So these players, and some of them they're done. They're not going to the NFL. I mean, I don't know what the carrot that you throw out there. If they just play, they're going to get paid. There's no determination. Well, you didn't play well, you don't get your check this week, and we can't cut you. I guess you could, but you still have to. If you cut them, you still have to pay them. And so the motivation for them is interesting. But if they play hard to the end, they're really going to give their coach and their coaches that are on this staff a great chance to be signed for a long-term contract. So they have really not a lot to gain. Mm-hmm. Their coaches have a lot to lose.
I don't feel as much angst about this coaching search, because I think there is that thought in the back of people's mind that, hey, at the bare minimum, Bobby Petrino's your fallback option.
Yep.
And like I've said a couple of times, I think his floor is higher than what the ceiling was under Sam Pittman.
Yeah, it's I had someone bring up an interesting point. Everybody's like, man, he has really been on perfect behavior. Well, now he's in control. Mm-hmm. We'll see if his behavior changes. You know, has he been mean to you yet, Matt? I don't think he has.
No.
Has he?
No.
He
been mean. I never thought he was mean to me the first time around.
And there were people that said, oh, he was really tough to deal with. He wasn't tough for me at all. Now, I always asked him football questions. Mm-hmm. He loved that. Mm-hmm. If you was tell me about that play, coach, he'd draw it up. I mean, it'd take time to make sure. But he now, of course, I'm not playing and I'm not coaching. I always had the feeling that he didn't ever read a word I wrote. Mm-hmm. So,
well, it's different than, you know, if you're in the building, that's different. No different.
Exactly.
Than whatever industry.
Well,
you're.
Nick but Saban. I think with coaches,
yeah. If you treat them professionally, they're going to treat you professionally back most of the time. I mean, that's my 2 cents there. All right, looking around the SEC this week, this is the first time ever that there have been 8 SEC games on the same weekend. Only time it's ever going to happen this year, too. I think it'll probably happen more frequently next year, in that you know, we're in the second year of this 2-year cycle where you get 2 bye weeks. And the bye weeks are based on how many weekends are between the start of the regular season and the conference championship games. Right now,
it's just a number of playing dates.
It's basically Labor Day. If Labor Day falls on the 1st or the 2nd of September, you get a bonus weekend during the season. And so that's why this is the second year of 2 bye weeks. So 8 SEC games this week. We'll start with Nashville. This is a really interesting game. There's 3 games this week that have top 25 teams playing one another. LSU, number 10, goes to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt is ranked number 17. Both of these teams are 5-1. Commodores are a 1.5 point favorite. And then on our predictions, our ratings prediction, it's got Vanderbilt by 5.
That's bizarre.
It's based on how dominant they've been. You know, you look at the Virginia Tech and the – I know what you're saying, but you look at the Virginia Tech and the South Carolina games. I mean, when was the last time you saw Vanderbilt dominate a single team in a year like that, let alone 2 teams back-to-back weeks?
Yeah, and they had a chance against Alabama. I mean, I'm talking about beating them twice in a row.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the better quarterback play. That's the key in the game.
I mean, that's bizarre Nussmeier too, because everybody thought up. Nussmeier was going to be a big NFL prospect.
I mean, if you got, you know, a game, that's where you start. What's the quarterback like?
I went back and forth on this one. You think Vanderbilt wins?
I think they do.
I went back and forth on it, and I picked Vanderbilt.
Not betting it, but I think they would.
I think Vanderbilt, again, I could see LSU going in there and winning this thing by 2 scores. Problem with LSU, though, has been they just don't score very well. They got a great defense.
No running game.
Defensively, they're the best. They may be the best defense in the country. Certainly, they're number 1 in our efficiency ratings, but they can't score. And even like last week against South Carolina, 2 times they get inside the 5-10 yard line, fumble and an interception, and it kills a drive, and they only win that game 20-10, a game that they could have won by, you know, 34-10. So that's the thing with LSU, that it's just their inability to score consistently. And I'll tell you the other thing Vanderbilt does. They're an old-school type offense where they are ball control, 6.5, 7, 8 minutes off the clock. They don't give you a whole lot of chances to score. And their defense is good enough that they can get you off the field some. And if you only have 7 or 8 chances to score, it really helps shrink the game.
So they don't have lost yardage plays. So they're always in – if you don't have lost yardage plays, you're always in 3rd and short. And so your 3rd down percentage goes way up. And they have a quarterback that can make plays on 3rd and 3. And I'm talking about make plays at the line of scrimmage. He's an old guy. I mean, he's been around, and he knows that offense. And who knows? They may give him another 2 or 3 years of eligibility in the NCAA.
I think he's petitioning. That game's at 11 o'clock on ABC, by the way. 11:45 on SEC Network. Oklahoma, ranked number 14, going to South Carolina. The Sooners are a 4.5-point favorite coming off of that loss to Texas in the Red River game. Our ratings prediction likes OU by 3.
Yeah, they've got the pass rush to really, frustrate South Carolina's offense. But I don't think I've seen enough of this quarterback to know whether his thumb is okay.
Mm-hmm.
He's had thumb surgery,
mm-hmm.
and he looked – it wasn't so much that he couldn't throw it. He just looked like he was unsure of himself, and there's probably some rust there from sitting out. We'll see if he's effective throwing the ball.
South Carolina's one of those teams like LSU in that they don't score a whole lot. Their offense has been really underwhelming this year, and it's kind of interesting. You go back to Lenore Sellers last year when he was having success. Dow Loggins was his offensive coordinator. Dow leaves, goes to App State, and it hasn't been as good for them offensively this year. OU, I like their defense. I will say one thing, though. Shane Beamer coached at OU. In fact, he went to South Carolina from OU. You know, this is a big kind of personal game for him. And one thing that South Carolina does well, they score a lot of touchdowns on special teams and on defense. I think OU wins, but I wouldn't be surprised if South Carolina wins because, you know, especially if they're able to make a game-breaking type play in the special teams.
South Carolina has underwhelmed me this year. I mean, it just seems like Oklahoma has more momentum, and I'll go with the Sooners.
And by the way, I don't think Texas is that bad of a team. I think that they might be kind of figuring it out. Texas defensively has been really good this year.
The offensive line played so much better last week against Oklahoma, mm-hmm. and I thought that the pass rush from Oklahoma would really be in Arch Manning's lap, and it didn't turn out that way. And so if they're solving their line protection issue, this will be a different Texas team than what we saw early.
This is a bizarre game to me. 3:15 on SEC Network. Mississippi State goes to Florida. Mississippi State 4-2. Florida is 2-4. But the Gators are a 9.5-point favorite at home. Our ratings prediction likes Mississippi State by one.
Mississippi State has, they've got the great non-conference victory, but they haven't gotten over the hump in SEC games, but they will this week.
And maybe the end for Billy Napier if they do, because Florida's got a bye week next week. This would be the time to make that move, I think, if the Gators were going to do that.
And James Franklin slides right in there.
You know, if I'm Franklin, I don't want to go to Florida. I want to go somewhere where the expectations –
I would sit out a year and do TV if I was him.
Do TV and then go somewhere where the expectations are not as insanely high as they are at maybe the top 15, 20 programs in the country. Go somewhere where they'll be happy if you win 9.5 games a year.
There's something to that, but they're also – you should be able to get players at Florida.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's another aspect.
If he sits out this year, he won't get the Florida job, because I think it's – I mean, it's just a ticking time bomb before Napier goes – I think I took Florida in this game. This is a total toss-up right here. Mississippi State, their defense is better than they were last year.
I like Mississippi State.
But their offense has not been producing.
I talked to Jack, your son, before I came in. He said, pick Mississippi State.
Okay. Rings his cowbell.
He said Florida's bad.
Texas goes to Kentucky. 6 o'clock tip, or not tip off, I'm almost in basketball mode. Kickoff on
ESPN.
Well,
if it's in Kentucky, it's a tip off.
Yeah, that could be true. Texas 4-2, Kentucky 2-3. Longhorns are a 13.5-point favorite in this game, and our ratings prediction likes Texas by 6.
Well, that means take Kentucky in the points, right? I think Texas wins comfortably.
I do too. I think Kentucky, and that's another one. The number of Power Four jobs that are going to come open this year, I think, may exceed 20. I really do. Like, Wisconsin, are they going to make a change? Florida, Florida State, Kentucky, I think there's a chance. Auburn, there's a chance. And then who moves from those jobs into it, – it's got the potential to be unlike anything, any type of domino effect we've ever seen. Like I said, I like Texas defensively, and Kentucky offensively has not been good this year.
They've underwhelmed, yeah.
But this has got the potential to – like, I don't usually call for a shutout. I wouldn't be shocked if this was a shutout. I think it is that big – of a mismatch. Texas defense against Kentucky's offense. I think Texas wins big in this game.
I'm with you.
6:45 on SEC Network. Missouri, number 16, goes to Auburn. Tigers, the Missouri Tigers, trying to come off or bounce back from that loss to Alabama last week. Getting tongue-tied today, Clay. Missouri's a 1.5-point favorite, and our ratings like Missouri by 6.
This is a game, and you just said something about Kentucky's offense. Auburn may not score
really
much
bad. Yep.
Against this Missouri defense. Missouri has got, what they do is they run the ball and they stop the run, and that's the combination that travels well. So mm-hmm. I think I'll go with Missouri.
I was listening to Josh Pate the other day, and he said that Auburn, that first half against Georgia, that might have been their fastball, and it only yielded 10 points. Because they were coming off a bye week. They had 2 weeks to prepare for Georgia, and Georgia's defense is not as good as, you know, Kirby Smart defense usually is.
They haven't had a pass rush.
Boy, if Auburn loses this one, that's another one of those where, you know, what happens down there, and they come to Fayetteville the next week. This has got the potential for this outcome to have a very interesting impact on Arkansas-Auburn next week,
so,
I think.
So you
know how much Auburn loves firing coaches.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
they started
counting Hugh Freeze's golf rounds last spring. That he's going to get to play a lot of golf soon.
Yeah, I think so, too. Tennessee is at Alabama, third Saturday in October, 6:30 on ABC. Alabama is a 7.5-point favorite in this game, and our ratings like Alabama by 4.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure Tennessee out. And did they – you would have thought they might have had a better showing against Arkansas, and were they looking ahead?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think every week is you have to figure out what is the mindset of the team. Do they have their stinger? I bet they play a totally different against Alabama, but I think Alabama's got that. They have a better defense than I expected. I thought that with Kalen DeBoer, it would be an offensive-minded team, mm-hmm. and it looks that And I would say all these coaching searches, somebody's going to take Kane Womack.
Yep. I think there's a good chance of that too, because he's been a head coach before. He left a head coaching job.
And he's got SEC experience
to go to Alabama. Tennessee's defense is not very good. What do you think about Ty Simpson as a Heisman candidate?
Well, I mean, first of all, there's nobody that stepped up.
Right.
So as long as his team keeps winning and he's a central figure, he made two plays on fourth down in the fourth quarter against Missouri that keep him in that conversation.
He's playing well.
Yeah.
I like how he's playing. It seems like he's one of the favorites.
He's not using his best weapon, though. Not one pass to Ryan Williams last week.
I think Alabama beats Tennessee, especially with that game being in Tuscaloosa. One more before we get to Arkansas A&M. The game of the week, number 5 Ole Miss, is at number 9 Georgia. The Rebels are still undefeated. Georgia, that one loss against Alabama a couple of weeks back. Georgia is a 7.5-point favorite in this game, but our ratings like Ole Miss by 2.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. And they have they have been effective in the fourth quarter in the key games. And their quarterback has just kind of mystified everybody that's not – everybody thought it would be Austin
Simmons.
Mm-hmm. And here we are playing with a Ferris State legend. you'd think that he's not going to be able to get it done in Athens, but I wouldn't bet against him. So I'll go with Ole Miss.
I could see Georgia win a big.
Oh, yeah.
They're at home. They're really good at home. They got smacked around in Oxford last year. I think they got a better quarterback play. I like Gunnar Stockton. You talk about players making plays when the game is on the line. He's not a great quarterback, but he's not a bad quarterback. He's a very effective, what I would call a really good college quarterback. I'll tell you the other thing I like. Georgia's run defense is, you talk about their pass defense isn't as good. They don't have the rush, but their run defense is still really good. If they can make Ole Miss one dimensional, I think that they can have some success.
Well, you'd think that Georgia'd be more talented. I mean, if you just kind of look through, and I don't think Ole Miss is quite as good in the defensive line. That's where they've slipped. I mean, they had really two defensive lines last year. They could rotate 8 guys. Mm-hmm. I don't think they can this year. You may be right.
Finally, Arkansas and A&M. Of course, the Aggies are a favorite in this game. They're favored by 7.5 as of right now. Our ratings actually like Texas A&M by 13. And a lot of this is just because of how poorly Arkansas has played defensively this season. Arkansas is just 1-12 against A&M. Since this has been an SEC game. And that is – it's so wild to me that it's 1-12 because the games have been so competitive. I mean, how many games have been a blowout since A&M's
been
in the SEC?
There have been some near misses for Arkansas.
4 games?
Yeah,
4 games where it was, you know, not very close, yeah. If that.
Yeah, you go back and look, and Arkansas was right there to win a couple of those games in the fourth quarter, and then a kickoff return or a fumble on the goal line, KJ Jefferson's, Christian Kirk's kickoff return.
This is Murphy's Law game. Like, whatever can go wrong for Arkansas seems like it will go wrong. I was thinking about Alabama and Tennessee. Tennessee's won 2 of 3 in that series after I think they had lost 16 in a row. I really believe that in certain matchups, there is a mental hurdle that you have to get over that is handed down from team to team to team. Where I'm sure that there have been conversations in that building over here this week where you've got players talking to the new guys like, yeah, here's A&M. Every year we figure out a way to blow it at the end against them, or they figure out a way to win it at the end against us. And you have to get over that mental hurdle. And when you do, all of a sudden, you know, it opens things up.
There's a 30-year gap where it was just the opposite.
Yep.
Texas A&M, really talented, would find a way to lose to Arkansas. And when – I mean, it was pretty obvious that that's what was going on when Mike Sherman was head coach at Texas A&M and Bobby Petrino was head coach at Arkansas. So it – but I will say Texas A&M has been the more talented team the last – that 12-game series that you – is it 12 games?
13 since they've been in the SEC.
They had the better players.
Yeah.
I mean, it's – you just look at the
defensive
line.
And usually had
line.
The better team.
Yeah.
I'd say maybe there's been 2 times where Arkansas had a better team than A&M, and one of them they beat them. in 2021 down there. But it's always competitive, but I feel like they've got to get over that mental hurdle. And talk about Tennessee, they've lost 9 in a row to Georgia. This year they had them teed up to beat them. They miss a field goal and they lose in overtime. There's just something about certain matchups where you can't get past that team. Georgia and Alabama, the flip side, Georgia can beat everybody else. They're the best program in college football. They cannot beat Alabama, except for the one national championship.
Alabama's pretty good, though. Alabama's pretty good.
But I think the last 2 years, people would have said they thought Georgia was better than Alabama. Now that Saban's out of the picture, I think A&M wins. I don't know what the score is, but I think they probably win the game. It feels like it would take a lot of things having to go just right for Arkansas to be able to walk away with this one.
I'm just interested to see if there's consistent, solid effort and that's going to be a given with what Bobby Petrino is doing with this team. Do they take another step forward, or do they hit that roller coaster that I talked about earlier?
Do we know if they're playing for a trophy?
Matt, we need to talk to David Basil.
I don't know if they're playing for – well, you know, they played for that trophy down in Arlington that the Jones family paid for. It was their – they conceptualized this. That was one of the things after last year that was a question was, like, does the trophy stay out there if they're not playing the game in Arlington? Because in 2020, when they played in College Station because of COVID, I don't think the trophy made it to College Station, made it out there for that game. Now, A&M won, and they had won the year before. But I don't think the trophy was up for grabs that
year. So are you telling me the Aggies decided not to have the trophy?
I guess.
Okay.
By the way, they're having a Yale practice tonight at Arbest Ballpark. Would you go if you were in town?
No, I wouldn't go.
I think I am curious enough that I may stop by and just see what that's like.
It's Yale practice.
It's Yale practice, I know. But
yeah.
It's interesting.
Did the Aggie band come? Because they
don't know about that either.
If they won't let them march, they don't come.
They don't come. Yeah. Yeah. Notre Dame didn't bring a band.
They might send a pep band, but they don't send 390.
Notre Dame didn't send a pep band.
They did. That's probably the first time I've seen a program like Notre Dame come to Arkansas and not have a pep band or anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, A&M was the last one in 13. They didn't bring anybody. They didn't bring a pep band because they couldn't bring the full band. So these are all little interesting things to watch when the game.
I like to watch the A&M band. I always do. Yeah, I want to be there when the trombone players run into each other.
Next time would be the first time, right?
Yeah, it would be. But I want to be there when it happens.
Arkansas and A&M, 2:30 kickoff tomorrow. Game's going to be on ESPN. Clay, appreciate you coming in.
Thank you.
You can read Clay at our website, wholehogsports.com. You can read about this cookbook that he reviewed.
Eat like the hogs.
Karen Van Horn and Becky Bull. Looking forward to you reading that. We'll be back with another podcast on Monday. Hope to see you then or at our website, wholehogsports.com. Have a great weekend, everybody.